Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and this is the new improved Health Matters, the 2017 version. We've corrected a number of mistakes. We banished Rick Phillips. That's a good start, and we're ready to try things out for 2017. Rick is at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, drooling over electronic equipment right now. I'm sure we will get an update when he returns to the show in a couple of weeks. We give thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, also to Chief Engineer Larry for the laser Christmas tree email that he sent us. Quite an impressive feat. Way to go, Larry and family. With me to discuss 2016, to look ahead to 2017, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Shelley Irving, Assistant Professor there. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Our website for today's show, WMKY.org. That's where you have the pre-recorded shows. Go there. There is a tab for local programming. You can find our old shows. You can review over those areas where you might have been in doubt and find out that truly we were saying something stupid. You can also preview shows that you may have missed there. That's WMKY.org. Our research and other things, including Shelley's world's largest Nerf gun. Thank you for that, Shelley.
You're welcome.
That's on HM Radio Show on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show. You can find us there and give us some comments, give us some feedback, give us some show topics. You will not do that. We know that. But still, every once in a while, somebody likes us. And that's about as intimate as we get on Facebook, but we do enjoy being liked, I suppose. Our sponsor for today's show, the AMA 7 Recommendations for a Healthier New Year. For a better health in 2017, do these things and stop being mean. I wrote that after Rick left, so just stop being mean.
We can check that off the list now.
Stop being mean. But the American Medical Association had 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. We're going to go through those and remind you of those things. Number one, limit your consumption of beverages with added sugar.
Especially the energy drinks and the orange-flavored sodas.
Yeah. And remember, fruit juices actually, whether or not they have added sugar, they have sugar. And so we, in the hospital, if your sugar were to go low, if you were diabetic and you would get a low sugar, the first thing the nurses would do would be to go get some orange juice because it is loaded, in fact, with sugar. Number two, and sort of staying with this, know your risk for type 2 diabetes. And they recommend taking the self-screening test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Did you take that test?
I did. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
So you go to this webpage, and the first thing it says is, you need to know a third of Americans have prediabetes. And so you're going, oh, well, this is very welcome news. So I took the thing, and I said, I am a man. I don't have any problems with my blood pressure. I'm not on any medications. And it said, you're a man? Well, then you got prediabetes. That was it. So if you're a man and you're in your late 50s or early 60s, don't bother. Just assume you have prediabetes. But for the rest of you, go to doihaveprediabetes.org and find out if you have if you're at risk for type 2 diabetes. Number three, be more physically active. Every healthy adult 18 to 65 needs 30 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic physical activity 5 days per week, or 20 minutes vigorous intensity 3 days a week. I can't wait till I get 65 and I don't have to exercise anymore. But that's what they say. So there's that. And then I'll go four, reduce your intake of processed food and added sodium. And processed food, again, the key thing you need to know about processed food, if your meat comes in a geometric shape, if it is in a cube, in a cylinder, in a circle, then that is processed food. Added sodium, there are mixed reviews on that, whether or not that is important. I don't want to say there are two strongly held views in the medical community. One, that for most people it doesn't matter. Two is that for everyone it matters, and we can save literally thousands of lives if we will drop our sodium intake. I stopped adding salt, and I shy away from processed food that's heavy in sodium. Anything with more than about 100 milligrams of sodium, I'm not particularly interested in anymore. I don't know how you're handling sodium in your life.
Yeah, I try to limit it and not add it to anything. And I try to watch the salad dressings, store-bought pastas and barbecue sauces, they're loaded with salt.
True. Soy sauce is the absolute number one, but there are many toppings that essentially what happens if you don't put sugar and you want to make something palatable, the next thing you reach for is the salt. And so many of those low sugar additives and toppings, in fact, are high salt toppings. That's our sponsor, the AMA 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. We got through 1 through 4, and we'll continue with those. All right, here's a recommendation for your new year. Comes from, again, from New Scientist, December 12th. Why not adopt a 3-foot rodent? $7 a month, and you can go to the website Hero Rat, H-E-R-O-R-A-T. That's right, Hero Rat. They're specially trained landmine and tuberculosis-sniffing rats. This is an organization, a Belgian product designer, Bart Wiegens. And, you know, I got to say, we on Health Matters, we reported these large rats apparently are very good and very fast at detecting the germ that causes tuberculosis. They're much faster than machines. If you have a sample of your sputum and you want to test it for tuberculosis, 6 weeks, to grow it, they'll do the initial stain, and if they don't see anything, they'll do that. These things apparently can just sniff your sputum and say, there it is. We don't, I think keeping 3-foot rats in your lab comes with its own set of problems. But the other thing is, you know, it's $7 a month, and if you get the landmine rat, I don't think that rat's going to last but a few months anyway.
No, probably not.
And so that would be a fairly, it would be a nice thing to do for society, civilization, humankind, and also it's costing you $7 a month, and you're saving people from tuberculosis. It's a very common disease worldwide, not so much in the U.S., and also landmines certainly be nice to clear them out. These are sub-Saharan African rats, world's largest rodents, one of the world's largest rodents, 3 feet long, weigh about 4 pounds, live up to 8 years, don't have susceptibility to tropical diseases. They have increased tuberculosis detection by 40% since 2007, and they are good at removing landmines. You can adopt it, you can name it, and follow its progress on their website. That's Hero Rat, if you just do a search for that. So for those of you who have had tried to have rats naturally and are unable to, you can adopt a rat now, and it will be good for tuberculosis and landmine removal.
So do they have Hero Rat Cam?
Well, they said you can follow its progress.
Right.
And you just think, I don't know that I want to follow its progress while it's looking at landmines. That's, you know, I don't want to follow anything that is trying to discover landmines. I'll just,
or sniffing sputum.
Yeah, I'll just keep my distance there. So, yeah, you wonder, well, I, no. but you can, we are very serious. You can, herorat.com, you can adopt a rat for $7 a month. And these rats are doing good worldwide. This is a nice thing that you could do if you are so inclined. Next up, this was from December 14th in the British Medical Journal. And a guy named Andrew Steptoe, he in fact is the director of the Institute of Epidemiology and Healthcare at the University College London in the United Kingdom and published in the British Medical Journal. What he found was, people who continue to enjoy life as they age may live longer than their peers who do not. Are you surprised by that?
No, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think so. I think if you are, in fact, tired of life and don't enjoy life, then that sort of says something about you, I believe.
There was also a study this year that people who listened to live music were happier or lived longer or some sort of benefit, and it fits. You know, if you're listening to live music, you're probably enjoying yourself.
Well, this was a better-than-average study. They assessed, this is what they did. They assessed enjoyment of life 3 times at 2-year intervals between 2002 and 2006. So even-numbered years, 2002, 2004, 2006, they assessed the enjoyment of life, and then they followed them up to 2013. They had nearly 10,000 men and women enrolled in a study in the United Kingdom, and they used the CASP-19 quality of life instrument. And here's what it is. There are 4 questions. 1, I enjoy the things that I do. 2, I enjoy being in the company of others. 3, on balance, I look back on my life with a sense of happiness. And 4, I feel full of energy these days. Now, I got to tell you, 4, I do not feel full of energy these days. That one doesn't work.
No.
I enjoy the things that I do. I enjoy being in the company of others. I look back on my life with a sense of happiness. I'm 3 out of 4. Now, there was a 4-point scale. 0 is never to 3 is often for each question. And then there were 4 questions. Then they generated a variable and put this whole score together, and they had a score. And so 2,250 of their participants said there was no enjoyment of life on any occasion. Don't like company. Don't enjoy the things that I do. Don't look back with happiness. Low energy level. I know some of these people.
No know we all.
20% high enjoyment on one occasion, 22% high enjoyment on two occasions, and 34% high enjoyment on all three occasions. Again, they surveyed them every 2 years for three different times. And they had a third of them said, yeah, I answered all the questions at a high level of enjoyment for all three occasions. And then they had they lost 1,300 people. They started with these people who were in their 60s, followed them for a decade, and they lost 1,300 out of the 10,000. The number of reports of high enjoyment was greater for women. For those who were married or cohabiting, well-educated, wealthy, younger, currently employed, all those people got more enjoyment. And the mortality, the more you reported high enjoyment, the higher the mortality. And here's what it was. It was 17% lower if you, two times out of three, you said, I am having the time of my life. 24% lower if all three surveys, you said, this life is great for me. And this, they adjusted for demographic factors, baseline health, mobility impairment. So they tried to go through and say, well, let's account for the fact that some people, obviously, when you get sick, you're not going to enjoy life. The other thing is they looked at only the people who died 2 years or more after the last assessment. Because if you are developing cancer, you're probably going to lose joy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they did that. Yeah. And that didn't make any difference either. They still found that the people with low joy were more likely to die even 2 years later. So it doesn't look like that having low joy is an early sign of cancer, and that's why low joy people died early. So they don't know why. They said, well, the more occasions on which people reported enjoying their lives, the lower their mortality over the next 6 to 7 years. Those who said they did not enjoy their lives were the most likely to die. That's the answer. Good study. One of the things they said was, well, society needs to do more to try to maintain relationships. Old people wind up many often living by themselves, lonely. They lose their enjoyment. And maybe we could help people live longer by developing strong social relationships.
Maybe.
One possibility. Mm-hmm. Other thing... this does not, association is not necessarily causality. We're not saying that loneliness and pessimism necessarily causes these people to die, but it does seem to be associated. It's a pretty strong study. They were able to get 10 years of follow-up, which is pretty good, and they tried to account for these other things.
It would be interesting to see if taking good care of yourself correlated with happiness, like if those who enjoyed life better exercised more or ate better or took their medicines on time consistently.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to know causality, though, because if you're disgusted with life, there's really very little reason to take your medicine or take a bath.
Right, right.
I get disgusted. Bath, just that's the first thing that goes, you know. So I guess so. Well, we could. I mean, you could be deliberative about this, and you could say, well, it's important then. I would say if you have a family member, a loved one that is getting older, it's important to try to bring some joy into that person's life. And I've said before, I think placing dietary restrictions on people in their 80s, asking them to do responsible things, I think really at that point, if you can find a way to get a little bit of joy and fun in their life, that's the thing you ought to focus on. The best way for you to get joy in your life is to stop listening to this show. We're going to take a break and allow you to do that, but we're going to come back and end your joy after these messages. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. I am your host, Dr. Tony Weaver, with me from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Our sponsor for the second time, the American Medical Association, 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. For better health in 2017, do these things and stop being mean. I mean, if you're mean. I'm not saying everybody's mean. I'm just saying it rhymes with 2017.
It does rhyme.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, your motto has to rhyme. That's my rule. AMA 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. 1, limit your consumption of beverages with added sugar. And you mentioned energy drinks, fruit juices. Limit those. They don't turn out to be as healthy as you might think. Water is great. Coffee is good. Some types of tea. It turns out, I mean, I'm drinking right now some green tea that is made by the Lipton Company and put into a bottle. Turns out those don't really help as much. I mean, if you made your green tea, that'd be great. Put it in a bottle, not as helpful, but I do it anyway because that's who I am. Number 2, know your risk for type 2 diabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org and find out that you do. because one-third of the American public has prediabetes. Three, be more physically active. Every healthy adult 18 to 65 needs at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity 5 days per week, or 20 minutes of vigorous intensity 3 days a week. Did I say that right? I think I did. Four, reduce your intake of processed food and added sodium. We talked about that. Now we're on the new one. Five, if consuming alcohol, do so in moderation as defined by the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Up to one drink per day for women, up to two drinks per day for men, only by adults of legal drinking age. Six, this is annoying. Talk with your doctor about tobacco use and quit. Here's the thought. Quit.
Yeah, quit. And don't pick up e-cigs. Just quit.
Yeah. You know, we've talked briefly about e-cigs on this show. I am not convinced that this is a beneficial thing. I think, first of all, the method that e-cigarettes get nicotine to your brain is exactly the same as cigarettes. It is inhaled. It produces a rapid rise in nicotine levels, makes your brain really feel good, and fuels addiction. It is not the way to come off an addiction. It's the way to maintain an addiction. It's safer than cigarettes, probably. The other problem is we don't know what's in e-cigarettes. They're currently not regulated in any way, so they could contain absolutely anything. It is not water vapor. It is not water vapor. It is a form of antifreeze. It is a lung irritant, and we really don't know how irritating it is. We've never had anything like this before. So if you're into experimenting with your own lungs, then perhaps you feel okay with that. I would prefer to let someone else determine whether or not this is dangerous before I do it. So you're not fond of it, Shelley?
No.
I'm not fond of it. I would rather just quit. The other thing is certainly you can talk with your doctor. If you've had some problems before, we are there. This is the single best thing that I can do as a physician. I'm always glad to talk with you about that. But I think, to me, number six should just be quit. Quit by any way that you can. You can listen to somebody on TV. You can get hypnotized. You can use nicotine replacement. Chantix has had some of the safety warnings removed. It doesn't seem to be quite as dangerous as we initially thought. There still is Zyban out there, which is supposed to reduce the cravings. Any way that you can do this, you're going to be better off. And so just quit. And number seven, declare your home and car smoke-free to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke. We've done that. When you're in the medical community, it's almost a given. You're not going to allow that. But if you're in a position where some of your friends smoke and some don't, you can do this and still maintain friends and relatives. Just say, look, I just don't want you smoking in my house. A good thing to do. That's our seven tips from the American Medical Association, seven recommendations for a healthier new year. There were a lot of things that happened in 2016. We've got a couple of things. One I got from this actually came from the journal Future Crunch. It's based in Melbourne, Australia. A group of scientists, technologists, economists, and artists, musicians, and other experts. They provide perspective on what the future could look like through the lens of science, technology, and social theory. It's called Future Crunch. And they put out some of the gains in health and well-being. I think they put out over 100. My source had narrowed it down to 30-some-odd, and I cut it to 26. And we're going to read a few of them that we've got highlighted that we think are important. So we will alternate. That's we flip the coin, and and Shelley has agreed to go first. And so we're going to alternate some of the health gains worldwide in 2016.
All right, so the first one, the World Health Organization released a report showing that malaria deaths globally have declined by 60% since 2000.
Yeah, I think some mosquito control, netting, other things really had it. And that is, malaria is a major killer. This is a big deal. Number two, 2016, some of the most prominent diseases around the world, such as colon cancer, dementia, heart disease, started declining in wealthy countries, according to the New York Times. Now, we'll talk about this in the United States. We didn't quite catch as much of this benefit as some other places, but dementia is declining, and colon cancer overall is declining in the U.S. as well.
Public smoking bans have improved health in 21 nations.
and yet not in Kentucky.
Not in Kentucky.
Yep. So we still remain behind many in the third world with that. As a matter of fact, their number five was Uruguay won a major case against Philip Morris Tobacco Company in a World Bank ruling. Now, what happened was Uruguay said, look, we want warnings on the tobacco packages and not little tiny script warnings on the corners. We want 80% of the tobacco pack to be covered with a warning. And the other thing is we don't want you to put your fancy gold crowns and red and white logos and so forth. We want tobacco to be sold in generic, I think, green packaging with warnings on it. You know, we have in the U.S. required warnings. If you go to almost any other country, the warnings are much more prominent. You can hide the U.S. warnings. You can't hide the warnings in Australia. And now in Uruguay, you can't hide the warnings. And you can't develop the kind of brand loyalty that has been so useful to tobacco companies. Well, Philip Morris took them to court, and Philip Morris was determined that they could outspend the country of Uruguay. Philip Morris makes more money than the Uruguay GDP, so they could easily keep this thing going for a long time. Turns out, though, I've got the funding here. The Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids kicked in money. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation kicked in money. And also the former New York mayor, Bloomberg, kicked in money. And so there was enough financial heft there to actually carry through the litigation and to win. So that was a big precedent because Philip Morris had been threatening small countries with essentially legal bankruptcy by taking them to court and tying up assets, trying to stop them from putting any restrictions on tobacco. So this was a big win for Uruguay and also for developing countries around the world.
That's huge. During the holiday break, I visited a museum in Florida, and they had a medical exhibit. And in the medical exhibit, I've got a picture. Well, maybe we can put it on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
Is a pack of cigarettes that was produced in England. It's a black pack. It has a white skull and crossbones on it, and it says on it death in really big letters, small letters underneath it, cigarettes, with the warning that tobacco seriously damages health. I love it.
Well, yeah. and I have in my office, I have a pack that my daughter got from Australia with a prominent warning on every side, and also an American pack that you can look at that thing from a foot away, and we'd never know that there was even a warning there.
Yeah, the logo for it was Death Cigarettes for an Honest Smoke.
Packaging means a lot to the tobacco companies, and restrictions on that, again, that's one of the ways that these smaller developing companies can fight back, and this was held up in court. It was a great thing.
All right, the next one, life expectancy in Africa has increased by 9.4 years due to several things, malaria control, better access to antiretroviral treatment. For HIV.
And also, I think the child survival is better. Think about that. 9.4 years since 2000. That first of all, it tells you where we were in 2000. Not good.
Yeah.
But a big, major change. Mobile phones, ally in fighting against rabies. And the reason I included this, not that many people in the U.S. are worried about rabies, but rabies kills more people annually than terrorists.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not quite maybe as... rabies doesn't make videos. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, we don't think about it much here.
Other than that, I thought that was an interesting, fun fact to take home. Rabies kills more people annually than terrorists. Mm-hmm.
The Ebola epidemic is over, I suppose. Liberia officially cleared of having any active cases in their country.
Yeah, you know, and you're thinking back over the past 2 years, we spent millions preparing for Ebola with really very little chance that it would hit this country. We're going to talk about this more a little bit later, but Zika virus, on the other hand, is most certainly going to become endemic in the United States. And it took us a long time to shake loose any funds for that. So you look at the difference in our responses to those two things. It was unfortunate. That money for Ebola could have gone to a more general preparedness. But Ebola cleared, at least for now. 12, and we'll talk more about this next week. We have a dementia specialist will be on the show next week. The proportion of U.S. Adults with dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, dropped from 11.6% in 2000 to 8.8% in 2012. Now, there are more old people, so there will be more absolute cases, but the percentages are dropping. There are a higher percent of older people older U.S. adults who do not have dementia, which is a good thing.
Back to smoking and cigarettes, the number of smokers in the U.S. declined by 8.6 million since 2005. That should be accelerated by a tobacco tax that has been passed in California.
Yeah, of course, Kentucky did not pass a tobacco tax increase either, so we're still stuck with the nation's highest rates of lung cancer and the nation's highest rates of smoking. More than 30 million children in the U.S. have access to healthy lunches, and we're about to ban trans fats and have overhauled our nutrition labels. Controversy there, but hopefully we will have a more informative nutrition label.
Teenage pregnancy rates have continued to decline in the U.K. and the U.S. 24 straight years.
2016, the third consecutive year global carbon emissions from burning of fossil fuels did not increase, according to Scientific American. Now, that's kind of a mixed blessing. We at least have stopped the increase, but I know China welcomed the new year in with a very heavy coat of smog around Beijing, and we are in the process of right now some serious consequences. But we're not increasing anyway.
Mm-hmm. Following the end of conflict in Colombia in 2016, pretty much all of the war in the world right now is confined to an arc spanning from Nigeria to Pakistan, and that makes up less than a sixth of the global population.
You know, we think right now that unfortunately that war has kind of exploded and expanded so that it affects Europe, it affects the U.S., it affects population centers everywhere with acts of terrorism. But honestly, the area that's actually in conflict is one of the smallest ever. Mm-hmm. In April, a new report showed the death penalty became illegal in more than half the world's countries. Interesting.
By August, every major grocery and fast food chain in the U.S. has pledged to only use cage-free eggs by 2025.
I left that in. I don't know how that, you know, I'm not sure if that cage-free eggs necessarily are healthier eggs. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But it's nice for the chickens.
Yes.
And who doesn't want it to be nice for the chickens? The average number of large oil spills around the world dropped substantially from 24.5 spills per year in the 70s to 1.8 per year in 2015. I mean, we've got double-hulled ships. We've got better navigation systems. We do a better job of transporting oil despite some of the limitations with the pipelines and trains around the world.
And 2015 marked America's most generous year ever with charitable donations from individuals, estates, foundations, and corporations reaching record highs. And this 2016 is expected to be even bigger.
You know, and I did not anticipate that, the charitable donations. I haven't seen really a lot of signs of that locally, but I guess, you know, as our government has been less and less able to fund infrastructure changes, educational changes, and so forth. Private sector has taken over some. Interesting, interesting thought.
Yeah.
Hate to be, as Rick calls me, Debbie Downer, but there's some bad things that happen, and we'll get started on those, and we'll continue through the next fractional portion. First of all, and this is a big one in my mind, December 19th, the Associated Press, U.S. life expectancy falls as many kinds of death increase. This is a decades-long trend of rising life expectancy. I mean, we just expected this would happen. We got worried about the obesity epidemic. We got worried about our narcotic deaths. And finally, I guess this has all come home to roost. In most of the years since World War II, life expectancy has inched up thanks to these medical advances. Last year, it slipped, and that is a rare event in a year that did not include a major disease outbreak. There were other declines. 1993, AIDS epidemic, we lost life expectancy. 1980, severe flu season caused a loss in average life expectancy. But in 2015 and 2016, the rates for eight of the leading causes of death rose, and it appears if you look over the past 4 years, we're pretty much stagnant. Our life expectancy is no longer improving, and we experienced a drop in this past year. American born in 2015 is expected to live 78 years and 9.5 months on average, according to the CDC. In 2014, about a month longer than that on average. That's a pretty significant loss when you think about the entire population losing a month of life expectancy. American born in 2012, slightly longer than that. Average life expectancy declined for men, falling more than 2 months to 76 years. For women, 1 month decline in life expectancy. Death rates increased for black men, white women, and slightly for Hispanic men and women, did not change for black women. In 1950, we're talking about in 2015, 78 years and 9.5 months. In 1950, life expectancy just over 68 years. Unfortunately, we have some Kentuckys in rural counties that that's still the case.
Yeah.
Highest life expectancy in the world, Japan, 84 years life expectancy. Again, that is 6 years longer than we are here in the United States. Why? Some people think that obesity, which drives many of the causes of death, including heart disease, diabetes, and so forth, might be doing it. Then there's other things. The drug overdoses, higher rates of suicides. Drug overdose death rates up 11%. Over 52,000 people died, mostly from deaths from heroin and fentanyl. Other research has shown death rates are rising sharply for poorer people, particularly white people in rural areas. And, you know, when we talk about, again, I don't want to bring politics in but to play, but when we talk about the backlash against Obama, against his healthcare system, the vote for Trump, the people that those rural people that did this voting, they're dying.
Yeah.
This is not just simply, well, I'm dissatisfied with my income and retirement plan. This is I don't have a job, and in many cases, because of high rates of obesity, high rates of narcotic use, or whatever, their life expectancy is dropping. And so these are troubling times in our nation's heartland, and I think basically they reached out.
Yeah, I would agree.
So there's one. That is a big thing. This is really the first time since HIV/AIDS that we've seen this kind of stagnation in life expectancy and then a drop in life expectancy. We've been talking about it for several years. It finally hit home in 2016. We're going to go ahead and start because we've got several things I want to talk about. U.S. things. This is our health matters. I think we've got 11 of them, our top 11 things that happened in 2016. And I'm going to start off with the Zika virus. In 2016, spread throughout the Americas. I'm going to give you a quick rundown. In February, the World Health Organization declared Zika-linked birth defects to be a public health emergency. Funding was very, very slow in coming through Congress. Finally approved funding in September. Keep in mind, first cases reported, and World Health Organization agreed that they were Zika-related in February. Finally got some funding in September. First infant with Zika-related microcephaly born in Florida in June. First cases of locally acquired, not travel acquired Zika in the United States in July in Florida. In August, a travel warning to people going to an area north of Miami. Also, public health emergency in Puerto Rico. In October, Tom Frieden, the CDC director, said, here's the plain truth. Zika and other diseases spread by mosquitoes are not controllable with current technologies. We will not spray this thing away. We will not kill the mosquitoes and make these go away. Zika, in fact, will continue to come to U.S. soil and be transmitted on our soil. We got more on this and other health news from 2016 in our final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
I'm Shelley Irving.
And we are talking about 2016, trying to put a lid on it. First of all, our sponsor, the AMA 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. We'll get through these rapidly. Number one, limit your consumption of beverages with added sugar. Number two, know your risk for type 2 diabetes. Take the self-screening test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Three, be more physically active. Every adult, I don't stop at age 65, every adult 18 to whenever, at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity, 5 days a week, 20 minutes, 3 days a week. Take your pick. Four, reduce your intake of processed food and added sodium. Five, if consuming alcohol, remember one drink per day for women, two drinks a day for men, only by adults of legal drinking age because it's legal. Six, quit smoking. Quit smoking. Talk to your doctor if you need help with that, but quit smoking. Seven, declare your home and your car smoke-free to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke. That's the health tips from the American Medical Association, 7 recommendations for a healthier new year. Now, when we left, we were talking about our health matters, top stories of 2016. Number one, Zika virus, and I'm going to wrap that up with this statement. This was as of December 14th, CDC showed that nearly more than 4,600 laboratory-confirmed cases of Zika exist in the United States, including nearly 1,100 cases in pregnant women. Now, if you have a 6% birth defect rate, and that's what I've seen in the literature, you're looking then at 60 babies with either microcephaly or some form of birth defect related to Zika. That's not good.
Yeah.
It's not. Number two, these are the biggest stories of 2016. Opioid epidemic between 1999 and 2014. Drug over deaths in the U.S. tripled. According to the CDC, 47,000 deaths in 2014. We're up over 50,000 now. Again, Thomas Frieden, the director, says since 2000, more than 300,000 people have died of opiates, and we have yet to see any big decreases anywhere. There's more. But, you know, honestly, as a physician, I played a role in this. You know, we prescribed opiates. Mm-hmm. There was a period of time when the pharmaceutical industry pushed through guidelines that recommended using more narcotics, more opiates. We have since, the pendulum has swung. We may be, in fact, under-treating. The most recent CDC recommendations were actually not to use in March. They said careful control of prescriptions, intensifying efforts on naloxone to try to reverse opioid overdoses. But they also said basically they should not be first line for chronic pain. Mm-hmm. Again, it started with physicians. It's currently many states have put strong restrictions on physician prescribing, and the drug overdose synthetic opioids, heroin, and other synthetics, highest in the Northeast, lowest in the West. The increases were that, and death rates among men using rose more than among women. Deaths of women ages 15 to 24 increased by 116% in 2016. So this is one of the major contributors to our reduction in life expectancy. We're killing off young men and women with these medicines. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, you know, if you had a drug for cholesterol and it turned out it was fun and people started taking it even if they didn't need it for cholesterol, and you killed 300,000 people over a 15-year period with that drug, no matter how good it is for your cholesterol, that's too many deaths. It's just simply too many deaths. And so I myself have really soured on narcotics. The embarrassing thing is, despite all this, we have no real viable alternatives to narcotics. Now, people say, well, yes, you can do massage, you can do therapeutic massage, you can do, I know somebody's going to mention marijuana. Mm-hmm. There are some other prescription drugs that we've tried, but honestly, we do not have a pain reliever, I guess I would put. I feel that the best you can get from any of those is you may be able to tolerate the pain, but we don't have effective medicines that get people back to work, back to enjoying life. You may be able to duck out from your pain for a few hours, but that's the best women have been able to do. And that's a real failure of our medical system to come up with something that we can do better than that. Number three, EpiPen's high cost. We covered this extensively. This is, in my mind, symptomatic of some of the biggest problems with the Affordable Care Act. That is, the pharmaceutical industry found that if they could get past copays, they could price their drugs at outrageous levels to dip into common funds that we all paid into the insurance market. If we have, in fact, an individual mandate, we are all required to buy insurance, then we all pay for medicines rather than the person who needs the medicine. And so the question is, how high can we jack the insurance rates to pay for these individual medicines? And EpiPen was, in fact, symptomatic of that. Currently, 94% of the market share in the United States. There is an alternative that will be introduced this year. Some people are getting their drugs overseas, some people with allergy, because right now it costs more than $600 per pen just to keep one around, and they expire rather quickly. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at thousands of dollars if you have allergies just to keep them on hand in case something happens.
Yeah, and I have a son with a tree nut allergy, and so a set of the pens have to stay at school. So you're looking at usually multiple sets that you have to keep around, you know.
So you're looking at thousands. Mm-hmm. How long before you have to replace them? Months? I don't know the answer to that, but they won't go more than they won't go very long. Number four, this was one that we made fun of extensively in Health Matters, and we're proud of that. The cancer moonshot. Well, I mean, it was $1 billion to fund a research initiative on cancer. Keep in mind, at least in our neck of the woods here in eastern Kentucky, here in low-income populations, we're not doing half the things that we know to do to both prevent and to screen for cancer. Mm-hmm. So we could get a tremendous improvement in our life expectancy and a drop in our cancer rates if we simply banned indoor smoking in the state of Kentucky and increased our cigarette taxes. Without spending a dime. But $1 billion to try to find ways to improve communications, to develop a genetic database so that we can start to understand the genetic markers that seem to increase your risk of cancer, the cancer moonshot. Not sure where that's going to go under the new administration. Now, we'll tell you one thing. We, in fact, other than the EpiPens, we did not put any political things in. I think it's too early to tell on that, and so we just decided to stay out of politics with our top health concerns in 2016. Number five, water contamination in Flint, Michigan. That's been well covered. We didn't cover too much on the show, to be honest. It was a fast-breaking story. We were always behind the news services on that. I didn't have much to say. I will say, you know, we do have extensive drinking water problems here in Kentucky, and there are many places that are similar to Flint, but Flint has at least shown us both the problems and a way forward, although it was very expensive. Mm-hmm. Number six, gene editing in the United Kingdom and U.S. In February, the United Kingdom became the first country to allow gene editing of human embryos.
How do you feel about that?
Mixed. There are some genetic diseases, and if we know how, and it appears that we might know how to prevent those genetic diseases from coming and ruining a person's life, it is hard not to use that knowledge. This is very difficult. Yeah. Now, what they did, those embryos, and this will be disturbing to our listeners, they would not allow those embryos to live or to come to life, depending on your beliefs about embryos. But they allowed people to edit the genes to see if they, in fact, could clear out some of the DNA precursors of some of these chronic diseases. They also, it was the three-parent solution there, too. There was a mitochondrial disease where two parents came together to have a baby, and a third person donated the DNA necessary for the to fix the mitochondrial disease. So, in fact, this child, I think, had two mothers and a father genetically. So the United Kingdom has really been out in advance on that. Of course, they're using we talked about this before, the CRISPR-Cas9, and then a more specific system, a CRISPR-CPF1 scissors, where we can actually cut out sections of DNA. So we now have the ability, perhaps, if we're going to continue with this, we're going to have to see whether or not we can create humans who we can edit the genes so that they do not have these serious and life-threatening genetic diseases. Mm-hmm. Or we don't. I mean, ethically, we don't. But right now, theoretically, we're working on seeing if we can do it in the lab, and then we'll see whether or not then we decide we can do it for people. Number seven, calcium. Ethically, we've just, I think we've gone a great distance. Calcium supplementation and heart safety. There were two studies in 2016. One said that calcium supplementation leads to calcium plaques in your arteries, which can cause an increased risk of heart disease. A second study said, no, not if you keep your calcium and vitamin D amounts low. Vitamin D should stay at 2,000 to 2,500 units per day, and calcium, I think, under 1,000, I believe. But at any rate, they said, it's safe at those levels. I don't know what to do with calcium supplementation. I'm not sure it helps a whole lot to protect your bones as you get older. But there is still controversy around calcium supplementation. Mm-hmm. Number eight, fluoroquinolones. This is Cipro. Levaquin, very common drugs. We use these for a ton of things because they had a great spectrum. I'm going to read this from the FDA. They've updated labels to state that the serious risk posed by these drugs generally outweigh their benefits when you're treating sinus conditions, bronchitis, or bladder infections. They have tendon rupture, higher risk for tendonitis, central nervous system effects, peripheral nerve effects, exacerbation of myasthenia gravis, heart rhythm problems, and you can have allergies to them. And we, frankly, we ate those drugs up in medical practice, and it's going to be hard to make those changes. They're in many cases, the substitutes may not be as aesthetically pleasing in terms of what they can, germs they can kill, but maybe a lot safer.
Yeah.
Same thing, statins. I'll just say briefly, in the United Kingdom, this thing blew up when one group published in a major medical journal the problems with statins. All these statin safety studies were done in research, much of it sponsored by the company. Do we believe that or not believe that? The statins, there's a much higher rate of muscle damage and muscle side effects than was commonly reported. Another group said, you don't have the research. You're making false claims there, and actually attempted to have them censured. And so right now, I don't know. I had a lot of patients that had some symptomatic difficulty. I haven't had people get sick from statins, but I've had a lot of people that quit because of symptoms.
Yeah, I have too. And weakness, muscle weakness. Usually older patients, I think, had trouble tolerating them.
Yeah. Statin intolerance, up to 20% of patients, possibly, or less than 5%, depending on which side you're on. And into that toxic mix, here's the effects of statins on cancer mortality and progression. This was published in the International Journal of Cancer, November 22nd. It looks like that statin users have a lower risk of all-cause mortality, 30% lower compared with non-users, if they and also their chances of progression of cancer, developing cancer, dying of cancer, all significantly lower. So statins are a wondrous drug, but we're not, I still can't quite get a handle on how often they cause side effects. If you are able to take them, that's a pretty good idea. 10, nasal spray flu vaccine, the flu mist. We thought this is great for little kids, except it didn't work. The company's going back, trying to reformulate. The CDC, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, recommended against using it this flu season because it just simply has not lowered risk of flu. And no one's exactly sure why. But that was a big disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed like a really good thing. I think it was 6 months or 2 years to age 50 or so. It looked like a good thing. And then the final thing we'll mention, number 11, this was an editorial, and I picked it up on Medscape October 31st. Sugar is the new tobacco. We are focusing extensively, and you heard the AMA recommendations about sugar-sweetened beverages and about testing for diabetes. It appears that, in fact, sugar is much more toxic than we thought it was. Also, that it appears the reason it's the new tobacco is the sugar manufacturers have manipulated somewhat the scientific literature to throw a lot more blame on cholesterol and to deflect blame from sugar. We were running out of time. I'd like to give thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Brian Courtney, to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. The shows are recorded at WMKY.org. We're on Facebook at HM Radio Show. For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medicine on Morehead State Public Radio.